Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is New York Times, USA Today, Publishers Weekly, best-selling author Carla Negus. Carla and I will be discussing about the art of writing a romantic suspense novel and her latest book titled The Clan's Cross. This is the third novel in her acclaimed Sharp and Donovan romantic suspense series. Good morning, Carla. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Wonderful. And I understand you're calling from Ireland, so that's fantastic. And I don't know what time it is over there, but thank you so much for taking the time to call me.
Oh, it's great. I'm having a great time in Ireland. It's an interesting time to be here. It's later in the season than most people come, including me. But it's great for writing. I'm doing a little writing retreat and just enjoying my time.
Wonderful. Well, your novels are so engaging. Your writings convey such detail that pretty much everyone falls in love with the story, the setting, and in this case, obviously, with the author herself. So congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Thank you so much. I do enjoy writing, and it's always nice to hear from readers who connect with the characters and the setting and the story.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. For the sake of our new listeners, please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
All right. Well, I was born actually in western Massachusetts on the western edge of the Quabbin Reservoir, which is this massive body of water where four little towns were obliterated, really wiped off the map to create this reservoir. And I think that right there fired my imagination. And my father is from the Netherlands, so I have a Dutch father, and my mother is from the Florida Panhandle. And right before I was born, I have an older brother and sister. They packed up the car with the two little kids and moved north to this little town, which is actually kind of the inspiration for another series I have, the Swift River Valley series. So I'm the third of seven kids, and we're all kind of bunched together in 79 years. And one of the things I used to love to do as a kid was climb a tree with a pad and pen and just sit up there and write and spin stories. But writing didn't seem like a very practical career, so I actually started out at Boston University on scholarship as a music student. Sounds practical there, doesn't it? Anyway, I did it. It was great fun. I was a French horn player, and I learned so much, during my years studying music. Mm-hmm. But I eventually switched to journalism, graduated with a degree in journalism, and came out of college, got married, and had a little girl and then a son. And during that time, I was writing fiction, and I started selling some stories. And, fast forward, and here we are. And I live in Vermont. We've been there for some time. We're kind of on the Connecticut River, and I live up on a hilltop in Vermont. But I travel a lot. And I go to Boston. Boston's my city, which from the Sharp and Donovan series, Beckman's Cross, Heron's Cove, Saints Gate. We have a Boston connection. That's where these two FBI agents, Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan, are based in Boston. And so that's a city that I know very, very well. My kids live there, and I used to live there, so love Boston. And then there's a Southern Maine connection. And when you're in New England, everything's kind of close together. So I'm actually, although I'm in Vermont and New Hampshire between us, I'm still only 3 hours from the coast of Maine. And so we have a little connection there, and of course my Ireland connection. So we started coming to Ireland about 2006, I think, was the first time. And it's just a little, like I call it, my little pop fly from Boston. We just fly over from Boston to Shannon Airport and go there. So that's kind of how my life has gone. I have a big family. My husband, by the way, is from Tennessee, from the Nashville area. Mm-hmm. So we have quite a family and friends all over the place, which I just love, and I find it very inspiring as a writer, too.
Wonderful. Looks like life is treating you very well.
Well, I have a good time. You know, we have our ups and downs just like everybody else. But
I'm very
fortunate. You know, the kids, everybody's healthy and the kids are doing well. So life is good.
Wonderful. Wonderful. What life experiences led you to writing?
You know, that's such an interesting question. I think some of it was, you know, I've just always been driven to tell stories. And so as a kid climbing a tree with a pad and pen, I mean, I'm driven the same way. I just have these stories in my head that I want to get down on paper. But where did those stories come from? I think some of it is just a great imagination. So like with Declan's Cross, we have our, you know, I can remember walking on the South Irish coast. So this Declan's Cross is set partially in the area, the Ardmore area, for anybody who knows Ireland. And there's these, you know, it's an area of just, it's very, very beautiful. There's sea cliffs, whales and dolphins, and then there's these old ancient ruins of that go back to this time of St. Declan, which was around the time of St. Patrick. And so we're talking old. And you just go, and it ranges just this whole area, and there's like a round tower from the 12th century, which was quite a bit after St. Declan, and these, you know, the crypt where he was. So it's just something about that experience just inspired the story of Declan's Cross. And I could take that back, different books, and look and say, okay, here I was, and something about that triggered something. And it could be just a little element of a character, someplace I've been, like just walking in Maine in the fall and on one of those foggy Maine days, and just the imagination then takes off from there. So it's more that I love to tell stories, and I think of myself as being, you know, like aware of my surroundings and observant, and I just let the imagination do its thing rather than, rather than like chasing down a story. I tend to write because I have ideas rather than I go find ideas because I want to write. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because you sort of let the surroundings, the environment kind of speaks to you versus you have this idea about like I'm pursuing from a journalistic standpoint of view. You kind of let it go and let the environment kind of dictates where your energy goes.
Exactly. And it could be a like a little snippet of a character, too. Something will just get going where I can see this character and the character comes to life. And that would be Emma Sharp, for instance, is a, you know, she's an FBI agent who specializes in art crimes. And the way she formed for me was I could see her, I didn't know exactly who she was, but I could see her coming up to this convent gate on the isolated stretch of the main coast, and I knew that something bad was going to happen. But I could see her, and I said, okay, who is she? What's going on here? So it was a combination of the environment, the setting, and then the character and the action, and it all comes together for me. And and for me, it just feels like a very, very natural process. So that I don't have to, it's not something that I work real hard at, that part of it.
Right.
I mean, work real hard at writing, but the coming up, you know, where something just, it just comes to me and then I just go from there.
Very interesting. Why write romance novel?
You know, relationships are intriguing, and boy, do they provide a lot of fodder for conflict and stories and humor. There's a lot of humor in the book, so it just is a very natural thing to have relationships in a story. For me, it just makes sense, and you know, it just works for me.
Interesting. What makes a good romance novel, though?
Well, for me, it's the it's the back and forth between the characters and the transforming power of their relationship, their commitment, their growing commitment to each other, and of love itself. That there's a transformation that goes on there, and I think that draws me into a story and makes a a love story or a romance, to me, very compelling, and it resonates for me on multiple levels. So it's not just the one level. But I would say different readers bring different things to any genre, including romance or suspense, so that their sensibility might be a little different. They might want something different. So I love to hear from readers who really, they resonate with the relationship between Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan. It continues, Declan's Cross. They've been together for a few months, but everything's been fast and furious, as we say. And so it started in Saints Gate, where they just met, and it was around a murder, and then we have Heron's Cove, and then something else goes on. And so in Declan's Cross, they're supposed to be relaxing and getting to know each other better. And this is a little bit different for me, where we have a relationship that continues book to book. You can dive into the series in Declan's Cross. You don't have to read the previous two books to understand what's going on with them or with the story. Of course, it's always good to start. A lot of people like to start from the beginning. Or, I'll dive into a series and then go back to the beginning and read them all. But their relationship is, it comes to life, and having it develop over a couple of books, you can dig around deeper, or certain things can develop more slowly. And just that, how their relationship changes them individually, how they view the world, what they're able to make peace with in their own lives. We see all that progressing. As we say, Emma Sharp is someone who has secrets, and Colin Donovan's is someone who has demons. So that's my little thing I think about with those two characters. So that gives a lot of fodder for a relationship, doesn't it?
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, it's complex. It's wonderful because in some ways I think it mirrors real life. I think that's what the ultimate connection that people seek. When they read it, it reminds them of the situation they're in or people that they know in situations that they can relate to.
Absolutely. The for me, a good romance is relatable on a certain level. Even though, in my own life, I'm not an FBI agent. I don't investigate murders. I hopefully will never be involved in one or anything like that. Nothing, please. But that you take all those heightened stakes and then what resonates in your own life and that you can relate to these characters, ideally. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Very interesting. How has your writing evolved over the years?
Well, the one way it stayed the same is that I always focus on doing the best I can to get the story that's in my head down onto paper. But I would say the evolution is just, some of it's just life, my own life, and some of it's the way the publishing business works. And when I was starting out, I was really exploring a lot of different ideas and stories. I was always drawn to romantic suspense, the mix of a great suspense story and with the backdrop or the main foundation being the relationship between the man and a woman. So so I've enjoyed doing that, but early on that was not a selling market. That was just like the publishers are very resistant. And so I said, okay, what else is out there? You try to be practical too. And I dove into series romance and wrote very short books. And I really delved into understanding relationships, humor. A lot of the stories are very funny, so that was great to do. And just and just how you could propel a story without suspense, without a dead body or a theft or some kind of ticking clock in that way. So so now I pour all of that together into the suspense and romance novels. I put it all together. But early on, it was more distilled, I would say.
Interesting. So has your writing influenced your life a great deal?
It sure has. Here I am in Ireland, right? On a writing retreat.
Nice.
So
there
that's
we
a,
go.
that's an influence right there. I do love the freedom of being a writer. I've always been kind of a, you know, restless person, I guess. You know, I love to get out and go places and do things. I have my big family, 6 brothers and sisters and all my nieces and nephews. And so writing does allow me to go places. And I'm also, I have a lots and lots of interests. So with writing, for instance, with Declan's Cross, I'm able to learn new things about Ireland, about the history, about the art. We have in Declan's Cross is a 10-year-old unsolved art theft, and this serial art thief who's been on the loose for those 10 years and still is out there and still stealing. And so learning about all how that works and creating creating a boutique hotel, something as simple as that, and all the stuff I had to learn to do about that. Also, we have in the Sharp and Donovan series, we have Finian Bracken, who's become quite a reader favorite. It's really exciting. He's an Irish priest who ends up in Colin Donovan's little fishing village on the main coast as a priest. He's there for a year. And he has this interesting background. He and his twin brother started a whiskey distillery. So I've been exploring and researching whiskey. Things in moderation. But it's really the history of it, how it comes together. Fascinating. We have a little touch of sheep farming. Had to learn about that. Irish sheep farming and what happens. The Declan's Cross takes place mostly in early November. And so it's like, well, what would be happening on a sheep farm in November in Ireland? And it's like, that's interesting to learn about. So I love all of that stuff. I just love it. And sometimes it's just a little snippet, you know, something that happened, you know, it's a sentence. But but I have to go and find out information. And then and that for me is just enriched my life.
How about the subtlety of romances? How does that come about? Does one have to be a romantic person naturally in order to be able to write well in the romance novel genre?
You know, I know certain people wouldn't think I'm very romantic at all. I have to say, but anyway, so I guess I really think you. I think deep down everybody has a touch of romance in their soul and can. You know, I do. So, but for me, when I think of it's character driven. I really think about the characters. So someone like Emma Sharp in the Sharp and Donovan series will be a different kind of character than, say, Olivia Frost from Secrets of the Lost Summer, my series set on the Bobbin Reservoir. So I really think about the characters and the subtlety is in what's going on with them and what makes them different versus just plunking down something and saying, oh, okay, this is what a quote unquote romantic heroine would be. I don't think that way. If Emma Sharp, you know, walked up to me in Ireland now, I would recognize her. She feels that real to me.
That's interesting. How about when it comes to the complexity of relationships among families and so forth? Do you draw from real life experiences that you've encountered?
Well, I certainly, coming from a big family, I think does influence. Not that I'm specifically like taking my younger brother and putting him in a book. I don't mean that, but just being aware of complex relationships, being aware of relationships in families, brothers and sisters, certainly influences my writing. Colin Donovan is one. He's the second of 4 brothers. They're all strong guys. You know, I have 3 brothers, so I think that, and that influences who he is and what he's able to do. He's a deep cover agent for the FBI, and he is able to go out and do this very isolating, independent, dangerous work, in part because he knows he has this very strong family behind him. But they are complex guys. They, you know, and they have their opinion about Emma coming into their lives, into his life, because she's not exactly what he expected.
She's Emma's from a different part of Maine, from a family of renowned art detectives. So so she has her own complex family relationships, particularly with her grandfather, who is a this 80-year-old art detective based in Dublin.
Interesting. Do you use your novel as an escape to live adventurously in some ways?
Maybe a little bit I do, because there's certain things that the characters can do that I'm just not going to do. You know, I used to say I had a character jump out of a helicopter, and I said, well, I'm never going to do that. So there's other things I will do, but jumping out of a helicopter, no. And then I think of sometimes the books themselves, for me as a writer and a reader, it's an opportunity to escape into a world as opposed to escaping from a world. It's like I love my family, my life, I have a great time, but when I write, I can just dive into this world that I'm creating, this world of my imagination. And I feel that way as a reader when I'm reading a book that I'm really into and enjoying.
That leads us to how much of you are usually in the novels that you write.
You know, I always love this question because it's probably easier for someone who knows me to say, look at it and go, oh, I can see you right here. Because I don't think of putting myself in the book in that way. What I see myself doing is trying to transcribe the story and get the story down as best I can. So it's to make Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan come alive on the page, and Finian Brack and their Irish priest friend, and then Sean Murphy, our Irish detective, and Kitty O'Byrne, the hotel owner. It's to bring them to life rather than for anybody to think about me and bring me to life.
Interesting. In developing your various characters, do you use, like a better term here, like a whiteboard and start creating the various characters and then finding inspiration behind it? And you mentioned a little bit just now about doing research. And then do you go out and do the research to make sure that all the facts are pretty much correct in developing specific characters?
Well, I certainly do as much fact-checking as possible. Every now and then something will slip through where it's you think you know it, but you don't actually know it. And usually it's just a little thing. So you forget to fact check it because I know. but mostly I do a lot of research, and it can be in the tiny details, like I mentioned, sheep farming of all things, and just understanding the disease, like I mentioned, liver fluke, which is a nasty disease that sheep can get. So I do the research into that, the whiskey, all these different things. But in creating the characters, and sometimes the research, I'll be diving into something, and that helps me to understand the character. It helps me to shape a character, because sometimes they're not fully formed. Like I mentioned, Emma Sharp, I could see her, but I didn't know who she was. And so in the process of figuring her out, it's like it became clear to me that she had been a nun at this convent for a short time. And so then that leads me to, well, okay, if she was there, did she actually take her final vows, or was she a novice? And why would she become a nun and then an FBI agent? And so I asked myself those questions. And as I start to explore a combination of doing the research and asking the questions, she starts to come to life. And then also a big thing that I do is I start writing. And as I'm writing and putting the characters into situations, they sort of reveal more of themselves to me. And then you do research. So they'll lead you down and say, oh, okay, this guy is actually an Irish detective. And so what does that entail? And so you start asking questions and doing research.
What are the challenges in writing a romantic suspense novel?
Well, the challenges of writing any novel, of course, are just sitting down and getting the words on the page and trying to do justice to what's in your head and getting that story down so that readers can dive in and enjoy it. I mean, I'm always thinking about my readers and that they're giving their time to read this book, and I want it to be as good as possible. But then at some point you have to sort of just focus on the story itself. And in romantic suspense, romantic thriller, whatever you want to call it, you really have two things going on, the development of a relationship and the development of the suspense plot. In Declan's Cross, it's an American diver who goes missing, and Emma and Colin get mixed up with that. And so there's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes along with that. But so their relationship is going on, and that's going on. And so the pacing of the story and the timing of certain things, you know, there's certain things that would just be, you know, just not feel right to have like a heart-to-heart topic. You're not going to stand over, you know, discovering a dead body, say, for instance, just be really blunt and to have a heart-to-heart conversation about your relationship at that moment. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. So there's those obvious things that you don't do, but some of them are more subtle. And those that presents some interesting challenges.
Very interesting. Your novel also are known for creative scenes. I mean, you really describe the images so vividly. How do you manage to do that? I mean, is this something that is just a natural knack for you to, in this case, like you in Ireland right now, you're able to absorb the beauty of the scenes, the surroundings, and just sort of translate that into words?
That's exactly what I do. And of course, it's a, you know, sometimes it's easier than other times.
Yeah.
But for instance, in writing Declan's Cross and coming, there's a scene where they're walking along on a sea cliff. And I certainly have done that myself, so I could draw on that. And yet what I'm doing, and I think one of the reasons the scenes come to life for me, is that it's through the eyes of the character. So that the setting is not just dropped on, let Carla Negers sit here and describe the Irish coast. You know, it's really is through the characters themselves. And so what the character is seeing, so an Irish farmer who has been on this land all his life is going to see and smell and feel different things than, say, our Julianne Moroney, who's escaping this, you know, bad relationship or confused relationship in Maine and comes to Ireland and setting foot on for the very first time and is jet-lagged and has never driven on the, you know, on the left side of the road the way you do in Ireland and on these little tiny roads and arrives. So what she's got in the same place. So what she's going to see and hear and feel is different. And so that's what informs the scenes for me.
Very interesting. In developing your series, when you come up with the concept for the first book or just a book, for example, does book two and three automatically is in the back of the mind, or is it something that as you finish book one, then it sort of triggers into book two, not even knowing that book three will exist? And then somehow as you get into this sort of a writing trance that, wow, I could see how the story would continue to develop.
It's a little bit of both. When I started Saint's Gate, I knew there would be another story, and I knew some elements of it. Then that became Heron's Cove. For instance, I knew that Colin Donovan was going to be in a, have to leave and go back undercover. And I knew little elements of that, but I had no idea the rest of what Heron's Cove would be. And then as I was writing Saint's Gate, stuff came to me and I started to take notes. And then I finished Saint's Gate and it's like, okay, I have some ideas here for how to continue. And then Declan's Cross, I started where I knew there was a given where Emma and Colin had been in Ireland. Now, I could have started the next book after they got back. But I wanted, I just knew that there was something about Ireland and their relationship that needed to be told. And I knew that there was, so something was going to happen. And I knew Julianne was on her way to Ireland. And then it's the muse, you know. it just starts to come together. So, yeah, and now I'm writing Harbor Island, which is the fourth book in this series. And there's a little bit that takes place from Declan's Cross. You can read each of these books as standalones,
right?
But there is an arc from you know, the first, the second, the third, and now the fourth. So
that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Do you sometimes find yourself using props to kind of really get you into the role and being identified with specific characters in the novel when writing?
No, I've never done that. I know some writers do. Some writers, like, they'll do collages, which I think is a great idea. Once I got all the materials together for a collage, you know, the big the big poster board and glue and markers, I thought, I'm going to do a collage. And then I said, oh, no, I know what the story is. And so I started writing the story instead of doing the collage. So it's still sitting in my closet somewhere. But, but I, you know, I'm a writer who can write anytime, anywhere. And certainly I think there's something about doing an occasional writing retreat. And it's not so much the props of the characters, but it's just getting away from everything. I think of it as getting away from the walls of of just of your day-to-day routines and your life, and you stir things up. And for me, that can really be helpful as a writer. So, you know, here I am in my little Irish cottage and you know, on the southwest coast, and it's just simple little things that that just make me more alert, because there I have to think about them, including just the plugs driving on the left, all these things that then they somehow or another stir up. I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but they stir up the imagination and allow for discovery. I think of it and discovery. For me, is a time where you're not thinking about, like, how many hours are you writing, how many pages a day are you writing, what's your word count. You're not thinking about cover art or cover copy or marketing and public relations plans or anything like that, as important and interesting and good as all that is. You're just sort of thinking about the characters in the book and being and just letting things happen.
Do you daydream quite a bit, I presume?
Yeah, I always have been a daydreamer. This seems to come as no surprise to you.
With imaginary friends and all that, the whole shebang, so to speak.
Yeah, my kids would have this thing, and they sit there and they look at me and go, Mom, I can tell you're daydreaming, because my eyes
really?
Get around. You know, I'm thinking, yeah, you just kind of tune out a little bit. But that's too, you know, I obviously have to be fully present in life, too. But daydreaming is kind of fun. You know, just mind goes wandering off.
Yeah. Like, any of your children have picked up any of the ability, I guess, to daydream and to really be very effective in writing things down and be one of these days be a very successful author themselves?
Well, they're both really very, very good writers in their, you know, in their careers. My daughter is a history professor, of all things, and my she always, even as a little kid, she just loved all these little musty books, I called them. You know, she's so funny. But she loves history and American history. And and then my son is a web designer. So he has that visual. He could see things visually that, I mean, we used to drive down the road, and he'd talk about a car, and he knew everything about the car. And I said, no, you have to understand, with me, you have to start out, look at the blue car. I have to know what color it is, that before I know anything about the hubcaps. But he could see everything, and he's like that now as a designer. And then with his writing, he's just so witty and succinct. So when he does things like Twitter and Facebook, emails, he just, boom, he can just, like, condense it into just this little bit. He's just really, really good at that. And my daughter is a great writer with her history. She's just really good. So, and whether one of them ends up writing a novel, we shall see.
Well, the genes are certainly there. I mean, being a web designer, you have to be creative. And I guess, and for your daughter, obviously, she has a sense of appreciation of things that are all around her. And that's important.
Absolutely. Very important. And it's just, you know, they certainly have seen what it is to be a novelist because I was writing books. In fact, when Kate was born, that's when I started to sell a book, because I remember it was the days of typewriters,
And I would put her on the blotter next to me. She's just a newborn. And
yeah,
I'd be typing away, and she learned how to roll over. And so now we'll catch her before she can fall. And I put her on the floor, and then she started to crawl, and then I got some help. But I sold, that's how I finished, and that first book that I sent off to an agent was when right after she was born.
That's wonderful. Sometimes you may have to write about your story in itself rather than, you know, the imaginary side.
Yeah, write my memoirs. My son keeps threatening to write the memoirs. You know, we were at a pub, and all of a sudden I was very preoccupied with a story, and I started asking just blurted out something about about how you hang somebody, and my son.
Yeah.
He has this look in his face. He says, well, that one goes in the memoir, you know. So.
That's wonderful.
Detailed.
That's wonderful. It looks like you guys have a wonderful connection from that perspective as well. The ability to appreciate one's uniqueness. This comes back to the complex family relationships. I think, like you say, there are challenges as well as there are opportunities to build.
Absolutely. We have a great time as a family, and my own big extended family, we get together a lot, and we just have appreciation for all our little quirks. So it's fun. It's really great.
Wonderful. To whom do you attribute your successes to?
The first thing I think of would be my readers. I have such loyal readers, such enthusiastic readers. I'm so grateful for them, and they are who allow me to continue to do what I do.
What would you like for the readers to gain from reading your novels?
Well, I hope they enjoy reading the story. It's really about the story, the story as a whole, and that they come away from it feeling like I do when I read a good book, that I want to read the next one, and I enjoyed this one so much, and I feel that it was, a good use of my time.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about the fact that how you write your novels and so forth and how you evolve as a writer. Do you usually get into a situation where you schedule yourself to write?
Yes. I can write anytime, anywhere, but at the same time, I find that I have a certain rhythm to my writing, my writing life. So I know in the beginning of the book versus later on in the book that at the beginning I need to be walking around a lot more and sitting down for shorter periods. And then as I get into the book, I'm sitting down at the computer writing for longer periods. But I know in my own life there's certain times that are better for me to write, like in the morning.
Yeah.
I tend to be a morning person, and that tends to be a better time. So I do that, and there's a discipline to what I do, but it's not highly regimented. You know, it's not like every morning at 7:30 a.m. I'm sitting there with a sharpened pencil. It's not quite that rigid, but it is disciplined, and there is a rhythm to it.
Are you an engaging author? Do you really connect with the readers if they were to get in touch with you and so forth?
I love to chat with readers. I'm on Facebook. I do Twitter. I'm trying to do better with Twitter. I haven't quite figured it all out, but I'm certainly Facebook, and I have my website, carlandeggers.com, and I do readers can sign up for a newsletter there. And I also hear from readers by email, and there's a way to, just carla@carlandeggers.com, and I'll get the email, and I try to respond. Sometimes things don't, they end up in the spam folder. But mostly if somebody has written to me and hasn't heard back, then chances are the email went astray rather than that I am ignoring it, because I do enjoy responding to readers and letting them know about what's coming up next, what I'm up to, and hearing about, on Facebook, it's really fun. Sometimes they'll ask about, well, what are you reading? And I get some great responses. I've just got, okay, ooh, what's out there that I should be reading?
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, that's wonderful. So you're very engaging with your readers.
Yes. And, you know, I enjoy it. And I understand, too, that not every reader really wants that. They don't want to know the writer. They just want to read the book. And that's cool, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You are the founding member of the New England Romance Writers of America. So tell us a little bit about this organization.
Oh, well, Romance Writers of America is a national group, well, international, and they have different chapters around the country. If somebody's interested in writing, they can go to rwa.org and find a chapter near them, or just on their online chapters, too, and learn about writing, network with other writers, and so forth. And so the New England chapter was just started. It was me and some other writers, some friends, and we just got together, and it's still around. It's doing really great. It's a very great chapter, and it's very supportive of writers. And it's for published and unpublished writers. It's not just for published writers, so that's very important.
You've been in the business for quite a while, and obviously you have seen the evolution of writing, both the writer's perspective as well as, I guess, the publishing perspective. What advice can you offer to aspiring authors?
See, I've been telling people lately that my advice has changed a bit. I used to always say persevere, just persevere, keep going. But I think most of us know that if we don't write a book, right, if you don't sit down and write one, you're not going to sell one. So, I don't know how persevering isn't necessarily the most helpful advice. So now what I really say is to pay attention to what you want to say. There's so much out there now. Like when I started out, it was harder to get information about the business, about agents, about publishing, and now we have, the whole self-publishing phenomenon, and everybody's building a platform and all this stuff, we have a lot of input, a lot of things coming into us as writers. And so I would say to try to put that aside and really think about your story and what you have to say as a writer, what you're trying to create, and to really zero in on that. And that less about what other people's 10 rules for whatever are, or building a website or any of those things, which are all fine. But when it comes right down to it, it's really to remember, like, why are you writing? What is your intention as a writer? What are you trying to do? And to really focus in on that and to remember that's what you're here for.
That's wonderful. Do you find yourself writing 2 to 3 different novels at the same time, or is this something that you just focus on one novel completely before you move to the next one?
I focus on one novel completely before I move to the next one, with a caveat, and that is that I write before I really dive in deep with that one novel. I will write down little snippets because I have – I have 2 series going, so I'll have just finished, say, a Swift River Valley book, and so I have some ideas like, this is what I want to do, and I just write those down, and I let that simmer kind of subconsciously while I'm working on the next book. So, but I do focus on one at a time, and anything that comes up, I'll just jot it down and put it away, and sometimes I come back, it's like the whole story's there, where I come back to look at it and go, I have no idea what you were thinking, Carla. That's just no sense.
Do you find yourself cleansing your palate as well, your writing palate, in terms of like, well, I need a break here and I'm going to read someone else's work and then come back later?
Yes, I love to read. There are certain times in a book where I don't read just because my eyes can't take it. But otherwise, I'm always reading. I tend not to read in the same genre that I'm writing.
Yeah.
I don't know why, until I'm done with the book. But yeah, I love to read, and it's It's always great. I have nonfiction and fiction going at the same time. So
that's interesting. Does that help you in terms of the creativeness of the situation by mixing up the fiction and nonfiction? Not necessarily mixing it, but in the sense that having your mind at two different sets of track.
I think it just, I enjoy it for one thing, and
yeah.
I think that I can always read nonfiction. I always have something going on that I'm, you know, I do different kinds of books. I mean, I just read this book by this a memoir of a Civil War general, and that's got nothing to do with anything I'm writing. Although, you know,
yeah.
3 years from now, maybe we'll be chatting again, and I'll be talking about this Civil War general. But
there you go.
You never know. So it's more, and then it's just following my interest, and I don't think of it in terms of a lot of the reading I do is just what I'm interested in reading, rather than. And I'm not reading, quote unquote, competitively. I'm just reading.
Interesting. Do you follow specific authors?
I have some. Yes, absolutely. I just got Elizabeth George's newest book. Always enjoy hers. And you know, there's many, many others. So that just happens to be the one I just bought in the little Irish bookshop right up the road.
Wonderful. You have this passion about cooking. I was told that you love cooking. So tell us about that.
I do love cooking. Isn't that funny? Six brothers and sisters. I was the third of the seven.
Yeah.
And I just did a lot of cooking growing up. And so I thought, well, maybe I would end up hating it. But I still love it. I'm not like a chef. I just like to cook. So, and I've been learning some of the Irish recipes, been trying some of those. I have one, rhubarb crumble is one of my favorites, and I've tried all these different versions, and I've created my own recipe, which is kind of out there on some blogs that I've done, but I'm also going to put it up on my website so people can go and try my Irish rhubarb crumble, my version of it. So, and I just like to just do normal cooking, you know, putting a meal together for the family. My husband does a lot of cooking too, so it's not a chore for me. It's just something that I enjoy doing. And then when the family comes over, like I'll do the whole Thanksgiving dinner. I enjoy that,
you enjoy
part
that.
Of it.
Okay.
And then the part, yeah, anything that I don't like, I farm out to somebody else.
That's a good idea. Very good idea. Do you foresee yourself writing, I guess, a home cooking cookbook in some ways?
You know, it would be fun to do a New England cookbook, I think, sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have Emma and Colin are in, you know, the Sharp and Donovan series. They're in Boston and Maine. And then my Swift River series is in Western Massachusetts. I've got a lot of New England stuff that happens. So, you know, wild blueberries and apples and I think that lobster rolls and that could be a lot of fun. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but I can visualize it. It'd be fun. and it'd be illustrated. Imagine the pretty illustrations we could do.
Yeah.
Like a bridge, a sea shot. It could be good.
Wonderful. How much input do you have on all the wonderful covers of your book?
Oh, the art department at my publishers does a great job, and I do have some input. I like to trust them because they're the visual ones, they're the artists. But for Declan's Cross, I certainly had input on that in explaining the setting, because that's very strong on that cover, and the Celtic crosses, the sea cliff, the kind of stonework, even in the image of that arch, there's a stuff. So, and just the atmosphere. And then in the hardcover, the printed hardcover, there are these beautiful end papers that were done, and they're Celtic-inspired end papers. And so that was something that we talked about. So it's a real consultative process. There's a conversation that goes on, and then the artists do their thing, and I try not to get in their way, you know, and so far we've had some beautiful, beautiful covers.
Looking back within the last 5 to 7 years, how have you evolved personally with all the happenings that you've gone through, the successes you have embraced, how has Color Niggas changed or evolved or refined in this case?
Yeah, well, I've thought about this whole idea of change in your life, and I think some of it is just in the last 5 to 7 years. I mean, I've had I think about my kids and the changes in their lives and how that's affected mine. I mean, the biggest one is my daughter. I now have these little grandchildren, you know. I think of myself as a young grandmother. Yeah, but I have a little 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they are just such a joy. And that's a change for anybody who's gone through that of becoming a grandparent. It is just like nothing else, and it is the biggest change. And then my son has graduated, you know, graduated from college and got his master's, and my daughter got her PhD. So those are the big changes in my life are have to do with my family and how that then affects me. And then for me with, just continuing to work with a fabulous agent, a fabulous publisher, there's lots and lots of changes in publishing in those 5 to 7 years. And sometimes, you know, it's Toad's wild ride in publishing, and you just kind of got to go, oh, what is, what's going on here? And you just come back to what really matters in your life. And so those are, it's just kind of windy way to talk about it. But there's no beginning, middle, and end to it. It's just what's happened.
Interesting. Do you sort of feel there's a process of maturity that you go through in the writing themselves as well as you evolve yourself in the process of refinement and so forth?
Sure. I think that there's a difference between when you're starting out. You know, when I was the kid up in a tree, you know, with my pad and pen at 12 years old and whatnot, I had a dream of being a published writer. And now, you know, fast forward and here I am, and I am a published writer, and I've had some success with bestseller lists and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, it still is me getting excited about the story that's in my head, that is what drives me as a writer. So that's still there. That's as open and exciting and wonderful as ever. What is different is just I know more about the business. I know more about publishing. I know more about, you know, all the ins and outs. And I've tried some things that have worked better than others. And so I have that history there. And so sometimes you have to shove all of that aside and be that kid up in the tree with the pad and the pen and just enjoying writing.
That's interesting. So you have a period of time where a moment for yourself in terms of you have your imagination run off, and then at the same time, there are, of course, many, many times in our lives that we live in the present moment as well.
Absolutely. That does say it, because you have to, you know, it's just writing it's like anything else. You can have that when it's just the dream, it can be anything. And then you start creating things, you start doing things, and now it's like, okay, there's a reality here, and how does that fit with the dream?
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Oh, sure. I it's a humbling question, really, but it would be to focus on the quality of your work and the quality of your life and let everything else just take care of itself. You know, that a friend told me that a while back, and I try to practice it myself because it's real succinct. You just what you can control versus what you cannot control.
Has that been very successful for you in terms of approaching life?
Yes, it really has, because if I come back and focus on what I can do, what my focus is today on how I live my life and how I do my work, then the other stuff kind of falls into place. Whereas if I try to focus on,
the quality of your work or the quality of your life or the it's like I have to focus on that first, and then I can be. It just I don't know how to explain it, but it allows me to be priority straight, so that then I can be it actually allows you to be more open, more generous, more giving, more aware of other people. So it's not a I don't know how to explain it. It's not a self-focused thing so much as it is like understanding what you can do in your life, so that because that is actually empowering to you.
Yeah.
So I'm not a very good self-help person, but that sort of makes sense to me.
Wonderful. What is next for you?
Well, other than getting home from Ireland, so I'm writing Harbor. I'm working on Harbor Island right now. Mm-hmm. I'm writing that. And then I go home, and we're going to spend the winter up on our hilltop in Vermont, and we have a lot of family coming in, and look forward to being with everybody and just having a good time.
Great. And you do have a book that just came out this month, correct, as well?
Oh, I have a reissue of The Carriage House. It's just out now. And that is the first book in a loosely connected four-book series. And it's got a fabulous new cover. And it's just it's a book that's near and dear to my heart, yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you for the great recipe for living life and for spending this hour with me. It's always a pleasure to have you on the air. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Carolyn Degelish. She is the founder of Systems for Sensory Kids. It is a leading-edge organizing model that bridges the gap between clinical support and practical in-home solutions for rigid, anxious, and distracted kids. Carolyn and I will be discussing about her new book titled The Sensory Child, Getting Organized. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Carla, it is a pleasure, and thank you again, and have a great day in Ireland.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.